Hey, I'm Bruce Weinstein, and this is the podcast Cooking with Bruce and Mark.
And I'm Mark Scarborough, and together, Bruce and I have written 36 and are writing the 36 and first cookbook currently. We'll tell you about that on down the road. You can see all of our books, including a whole spate of books on Instant Pots and on air frying. Those are the latest. On any place where books are sold, whereby all the big New York publishers have been around for forever. And this is our food and cooking podcast. We've got a 1 minute cooking tip, as is traditional. We've got a segment in which we're going to unravel some cooking myths, some myths that are around still about cooking. And we can't believe after, 25 years in the business that people still say these things. And then we're going to tell you what's making us happy in food this week. So let's get started.
Our 1 minute cooking tip: taste your food and your ingredients through all stages of cooking.
All
of them.
Also, I take out the raw pork and I put it in my mouth.
Okay, so one caveat: do not eat the raw meat unless you're making tartare. But sometimes...
See, the writer in the team is absolutely a stickler for words.
Okay, taste your food and most of your ingredients through all stages of cooking, which sometimes means you're going to taste things you don't want to taste.
It's all that bugs me. But okay, go on.
So you're going to taste things that you might not want to, like briny pasta water.
Yeah, that is a killer.
You need to taste it. Is it salty enough? Spoon up a little bit of that water, blow on it because it's too hot. So you need a ton of salt and pasta water.
You do. In pre-life before Bruce, I was connected to a big Italian-American family. And I have to say that the aunts in this family and the nonnas in this family and all of them, they would always spoon up some of the water and sip it from the pasta before the pasta went in it to see if it was salty enough. I'm telling you, I saw them do this a million times.
Other things you might not want to taste, but you should, are things like dry, chalky spices. If you've got things that are in your cabinet for years, they might not have any flavor, so dip your finger into some dry sage and taste it, and it will let you know if you got any flavor left or if things could be going off the rails.
The big one on that is, of course, ground paprika, which for most people is no more than a coloring agent. It's red color. Red paprika is supposed to taste like something in their hot and mild varieties, but even the mild sweet varieties should taste peppery.
So taste everything as you go, from slimy, slippery dressings to pasta water to dry spices, and you will have better food.
Before we get to the next segment of this podcast, let me say that we have a newsletter. You can find it by going to our website, cookingwithbruceandmark.com, or just bruceandmark.com. And you can sign up there. You drop down on the splash page, as they used to call it, the intro page, the fall page.
Splash page. I know. How old are you?
Oh, my God. Don't even ask that question. Old enough to know about splash pages. So go to the splash page, as we used to say in internet lingo, and scroll down, and you'll see a form there. You can sign up for the newsletter. I do not collect emails. I do not permit the host provider, MailChimp, to collect your emails. It cannot be collected or sold. I don't even see your email. I just see a new subscriber has been added. And furthermore, you can always opt out of the emails at any time by going to the bottom of an email from us and clicking that you want to opt out. Those emails come out about every 2 weeks, something like that. They're often recipes that are in this podcast. Sometimes they're about our life in very, very rural New England. And sometimes they're about things completely disconnected from anything else that we're doing, because it's a newsletter. So what do you say? All right, on to the next segment of our podcast, which is all about cooking myths and the weird things that people still say. We can't believe people still say them, and yet they're still floating around everywhere.
For this segment, we've dusted off one of our earlier books in our career, Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them, and 100 Other Myths About Food and Cooking.
Lobsters do not scream.
They do not have vocal cords. There's no screaming. So here are some of the top pieces of cooking bull out there that we think is kind of crazy. One, sear your meat well to keep it juicy.
Now, I have to say about this, sear the meat to keep it juicy. This still is everywhere. It's on cooking shows. It's on the Great British Baking Show about sausages. It's on TikTok videos. It is everywhere. And I love, for example, on the Great British Baking Show about sausages, I love saying that as you look down into the skillet full of grease. And I'm like, where do you think that came from? Did that come from Nowheresville?
Okay, searing your meat does a couple of things. First of all, it caramelizes the Maillard reaction. It chars the outside of the meat and makes it taste absolutely delicious.
Of course.
But it doesn't seal anything inside. The basic effect is this. You're making the outer edges of that meat drier compared to the tender, juicy innards. So it's an illusion for your tongue.
And part of the illusion, especially when you deal with protein, if you're a carnivore, part of the illusion is that you salivate. And you salivate at the charred bits, and you mistake the amount of, I know, gross saliva that you have produced for something that's in the meat. It's not. In fact, when you sear meat, you actually, as Bruce says, to use a totally culinary word, desiccate the exterior of the meat. That's really crucial, of course, to great flavor, but it doesn't seal in any juices. No. The second big cooking myth we see a lot is this idea that somehow if you cook a piece of, particularly meat, we seem to be on meat right now, if you cook a piece of meat in liquid, it keeps it moist.
Yeah, another thing that people think keeps meat moist.
No.
Just because you're cooking in a liquid doesn't make it moist.
No.
I have made many a pot roast that have come out dry. And how does that happen? Because it's the temperature of the cooking, not a moist or wet environment, that keeps meat moist.
Yep.
The hotter it is, the more moisture is forced out of the meat.
Yeah, just think about it this way. When things get really hot, they get really tight, just like your clothes at the beach. They get really... They get really
and
tight.
And sweaty.
and you know, as it tightens up, it's going to force any liquid out between the interstitial spaces in the cells and elsewhere. And any fat's going to melt. It is, in fact, going to continue to dry out. Can you lower the temperature for a better braise? Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. But don't fool yourself to think that somehow pouring liquid into a pot and then throwing chicken breasts in it. I'm looking at you, Josh's mom. If you know TikTok, you know what I'm talking about. Don't fool yourself that you're making things moist. You're not. When you cut into it, it's still going to shard apart as a boneless, skinless chicken breast, especially if you've kept it at a boil. So move on. One more about meat. Let's go there.
Some people say you can't freeze meat once it thawed. Those people are idiots.
No.
First things first, I do want to get a fact out there. You cannot refreeze ground meat once it's thawed.
That's right.
However,
ground meat of all sorts,
of
chicken,
all sorts.
Turkey, pork,
beef,
buffalo, grandmother, you cannot
ground grandmother. Nice. But now that we have that out of the way, Big Bad Wolf, let's talk about what you can refreeze.
Yes. Well, you can refreeze cuts of meat. Mm-hmm. So pork chops, pork loin, briskets, etc. But there's a caveat here.
Steaks, roasts.
Yep, there's a caveat here. And you notice we're talking about, there are two caveats, actually. You notice that we're, in fact, there are three caveats. I feel like Monty Python.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
There are four caveats. Anyway, there are two caveats. One is that we're not talking about fish and shellfish. So remember, that's off the table right now. But when we're talking about meat, you can refreeze it if it has been stored in a fridge at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or lower for 48 to maybe 72 hours.
Ooh, but
72 is getting
pushing
it. If you pulled out, let's say, I don't know, you pulled out a pork loin and you thawed it in the fridge, not at room temperature at all, but in the fridge, so it's going to take a couple days for it to thaw. And then you're ready to cook it, and, you know, your partner comes home and says, oh, let's go to dinner, and you think, oh, I'd rather go out to dinner. But I've thawed this pork loin in the fridge. Don't worry about it. Just put it back in the freezer.
So the first caveat is it must have been thawed in the fridge. The second is fish. What's the third one?
Oh, I don't have a third one. What is the third one?
I'll give you a third one.
Sure.
When it was frozen, it had to be fresh.
Oh, right.
So let's say
you bought
steaks and their sell-by date was the 5th of whatever month, and you put them in the freezer on the 6th. I wouldn't refreeze them once I thawed them, because now you're beyond an expiration
date. You cannot, and just to say, just to be perfectly and absolutely clear, you cannot refreeze meat. No, you can't do it a second time.
Now if
you pull that pork loin out after you've refrozen it, and you thought, and still you're going to go out, lucky you, you go out to dinner a lot, still you're going to go out to dinner, you can't now refreeze it.
And so you might as well cook it and slice it up and have it on sandwiches for lunch.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so let's move on off meat and into alcohol. And this is one of my favorites, and it is this idea that somehow alcohol cooks out of the food you make.
Alcohol does evaporate with heat, which is why if you light a Cherry's Jubilee, the alcohol burns a beautiful flame.
Yes.
But the alcohol will never completely go away, no matter how long you cook it. Even simmering a bottle of wine in a stew for 20 minutes can leave you 50% of the alcohol
50%.
Behind.
50%. In fact, in chemical tests, in, you know, these kind of places where the culinary world does chemical tests, in a four-hour braise that included wine, the original amount of alcohol is still at between 4 and 5% after 4 hours of bubbling away. There is no way that all the alcohol cooks out. Never.
Mm-mm. But if you're worried about your kids, you know, getting bombed during dinner, don't worry about it. Most recipes calling for alcohol, it's in quantities that would make it impossible to get a buzz after cooking.
Yes, that's true. Well, Bruce and I are currently watching a Swedish show, Bonus Family.
Oh, it's fabulous.
It's absolutely fabulous. And I can totally imagine those kids getting bombed at the dinner table. But anyway, yeah, and you should really think about this, not so much for your kids. Listen, if your kids have a 4% alcohol content in a big beef stew, okay, you know, honestly, I think it's okay, but you have to make your own moral choices here. But the thing is, if you have friends who have issues with alcohol, whether that be health issues, for example, I don't know, they're in chemo, or they have alcohol addiction issues, whatever their issue with alcohol is, just remember that you're not cooking the alcohol out.
Right.
So we always, our way of handling this is that we ask in advance. For example, we have some friends who are recovering alcoholics, and we say, is it okay if we cook with alcohol? And I have to say, I will just tell you that in the cases of specifically the friends I'm thinking of, every one of them says it's okay. They are fine with it. But I can imagine somebody who is not fine with it, who says, no, I absolutely want no alcohol in my life. And this becomes really important just to push it with health concerns, with people who have chemo, with people who are immunocompromised, who are on anti-rejection drugs for transplants. In these cases, these people really shouldn't have any alcohol.
Your uncle with cirrhosis?
Yeah, no. These people should have absolutely no alcohol. So even if they say it's okay, I wouldn't feed it to them. But, you know, we just check and we make sure. Okay, let's move from alcohol on to chilies.
The seeds of the chili are not the hottest part, despite everything that's written. When we write recipes that say, you know, you're using chilies and you could take the seeds out, Mark is very careful to say remove the seeds and membranes.
Right.
Because the membrane is where the heat is.
Technically, the placenta of the chili. Now, we're back chili to ground grandmother. the placenta of the chili is that membrane that holds the seeds. And that's where the hot stuff, capsaicin, is mostly stored. When you cut a chili, you may experience the seeds as being very hot. But that's because that capsaicin has been disturbed in the membranes. It's probably been cut in some way and sliced. And it has leached and or sprayed out onto the seeds. So do you know this? This is just has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Do you know that mammals are affected by this? So your dog, your cat, me, you, we're affected by the hot stuff in chilies, but birds are not.
Nope. And this way, birds can eat these chilies and deposit those seeds as they fly from the other hole in their bodies so their plants can grow already fertilized in other places.
And not only that, our digestive system kind of ruins seeds.
Yeah, start with the teeth. They grind them up.
Yep.
The acid in your stomach gets rid of them. Yeah.
And so the plant is actually trying to keep its progeny, its children, away from me and you and my dog and your dog and my cat and your cow
and
your horse.
Just think of the capsaicin as sort of like the porcupine quills of the chili.
Except it doesn't work with birds.
Except
so
it doesn't work
birds with birds. Are immune to this thing. It's like possums are immune to snake venom. It's the same thing. Okay, anyway, let's move on.
Finally.
Finally the bit about superfoods.
Superfoods are not magic bullets.
Yeah, this is really big right
yes,
now.
Yes, they're good
it's
for
all
you.
All over TikTok. And there are so many health influencers that are just absolutely insane with this. And I just can't deal with it. I really can't. Blueberries are good for you.
They're very good for
eat
you.
Eat more.
Eat more, but eating a whole pint of them will not cure cancer.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
they won't.
It won't. And I'm sorry if this offends you, but eating, raspberries every day are great for you. You should eat them. They're an excellent source of vitamin C. Generally, you eat them raw, which means the vitamin C is completely intact mm-hmm. in the raspberries.
Good
they
fiber.
Have great yeah. fiber. It's a beautiful thing. And North Americans do not eat enough fruit and vegetables.
I saw a TikTok video the other day that killed
we're back
me.
To TikTok.
I know. So this woman is sitting there at her computer and the guy comes in the kitchen and she looks up and says, "Do you eat fruit every day?"
Oh my God.
And it was this whole
is this his Roman Empire?
And he was like, "What are you talking about? Fruit? No, I don't eat fruit every day." And she's like, and he was shocked that she eats fruit every day.
Yeah, in I'm our like, house, we both eat fruit every single
I'll
day.
I'll eat an orange. I'll eat some berries. I'll eat an apple.
Listen, North Americans don't eat enough fruit. And part of it is because the quality of the fruit in the standard supermarket is kind of gross. Mm. That is part of the problem because of global transportation. It's led to unappetizing fruit. I mean, let's face it, those mushy apples sitting in the supermarket are not appetizing, and those hard as rock plums
and the moldy berries
are not appetizing. But probably of all the fruit choices in your supermarket, citrus now in the winter and berries almost always mm-hmm. are probably among the best choices. But just think this. Don't think superfoods. Just eat more fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yes. And bananas all year long. And I don't care that bananas are nature's cheesecake. That makes them even more delicious.
That's true. It comes out of our life. We were on a photo shoot for one of our books once, and this nasty art director wouldn't eat a banana. But she said, "My father says bananas are nature's cheesecake." In other words, she wasn't going to eat it to put weight on it. And I'm like, you know what? Just eat a piece of cheesecake if you want it or don't. But don't make it a big health issue. Make it a personal issue. Anyway, okay, sorry. I'm getting off my hobby horse. Well, the deal is North Americans need to eat many, many more fruits and vegetables to be healthy. Your gut will thank you. Your brain will thank you. Your heart will thank you. Eat more fruits and vegetables.
Your mouth will thank
you. But don't make it into some mystical thing that it's going to turn you into a superhero. It's not Calvin of Calvin and Hobbes. It's not going to turn you into a superhero. It's just going to make your life, your health better.
It is.
Before we get to the final segment of our podcast, we really appreciate that you're here with us. If you can subscribe to this podcast, that would be terrific. You won't miss a single episode. If you can rate it, that's even better. And if you're on a platform that allows you to write a comment, even like, "Nice show" or "Great job." Thanks. That's a really nice thing to do. Thank you. I know it helps us with the algorithms. I know that that's not your problem. That's our problem. But we certainly do appreciate it. Okay, on to the end of the podcast. What's making us happy in food this week? And I'm going to start.
Okay.
I get to start. And what's making me happy is a dish that I love, pad kee mao. And pad kee mao sometimes is called drunken noodles or drunken Thai noodles because I think it's supposed to be you're inebriated and
you're drunk, you get them from a street stall.
In Thailand, I don't
like
that.
It's rice noodles and they have chicken and basil.
That's what I like. Mm. It's the chicken, basil, spicy, rice noodle-y thing. And Bruce made a big wok full of it this week and we ate the entire wok. I'm not ashamed to say I ate the entire wok of it and it was utterly delicious. It was hot, it was spicy, it was sweet, it was basil-y, there was chicken in it, and those delicious rice noodles.
I love rice noodles.
Just a fabulous dish. It was a fabulous meal. I was very contented as I left that meal to go watch the Swedish show Bonus Family. I should get paid for Bonus Family. Anyway, what's making you happy in this food?
It's a vegetable. It's a red Fresno chili.
Oh,
and
God.
I actually sliced them and put them in that Thai stir fry. I love these chilies. They're like short, squat jalapenos, but they're red and they're pointy. And they are really spicy, but they're also very sweet. It's like on first bite, you think you're just having a sweet red bell pepper because they have so much bell pepper flavor. And then the heat hits you. And I love them because of that sweet and that hot. And I'm putting them in everything. And this new book we're working on has lots and lots of recipes for things like pickles and chutneys. So I'm using lots of those chilies in everything.
And did you know this, that D Magazine just had an article that came out this week that jalapenos, because of the varietals used, are getting, fresh jalapenos, are getting milder and milder and milder. And that most of the jalapenos now that show up in our supermarkets are so absurdly mild. And they are. And Fresnos still retain a level of heat.
Love that.
In fact, according to D Magazine, and I think according experientially to our having these things, Serranos are now hotter than jalapenos, which shouldn't be the case. It should be the other way around.
I love Serranos,
I know
too.
That when I sometimes grow chilies on our back deck in the summer. And when I grow jalapenos, we're both blown away at how hot they are.
Your homegrown ones are... They're just nature's napalm.
They are. They're really hot. And it reminds me of being a kid, living in Texas, when jalapenos were super hot. My father loved jalapenos on cheese nachos.
And he also loved to complain about heartburn.
There may be a reason for that. And he also had diverticulitis, so that may be a reason for all of that. Anyway, but I remember how hot they were, and I couldn't even stand them as a kid. And now they're pretty mild. So Bruce is right. Fresnos are a great choice because they do have this sweet bell pepper component, and yet they're still very spicy. Well, that's the podcast for this week. Thanks for being on this journey with us. We hope you learned something. We hope we gave you a few laughs over the course of the podcast, and we hope you'll come back.
And we tell you every week what's making us happy in food. So go to our Facebook page, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Tell us what's making you happy in food this week, and we can talk about it here on Cooking with Bruce and Mark.